Eric Jett is the guy who creates the music of The Past Day. Thanks for coming to The Antidote, Eric.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I'm really excited to be here.
The Past Day is relatively new because you've been churning out music since just 2022. You got to tell me, how about before then? Were you making other music?
Yeah. Since high school, played in different bands. Was in a hardcore band a little after high school. Did some singer-songwriter stuff, but pretty much mid to late aughts, kind of stopped writing music for the most part. And then around 2014, started writing a little bit more, but put the instruments away, actually sold most of my gear, started a family, had a lot of responsibilities. And though I've always loved writing music, for a little while, felt like that chapter of my life was over, but it turns out it was just a season, and picked the instruments back up and started putting music out again. And it's felt really, really good.
So what was the motivation for you to jump back in?
So my first album, All Glory, was songs that were mostly recorded in 2014. My wife and I went through some trials and some testing of our faith. Our doctrines and beliefs changed and deepened, and I was just going through a really tough time, but also a really beautiful time. And I kind of turned back to music writing briefly there, and I wrote all the songs for that album in a relatively short period of time. And a buddy of mine helped me record most of that in this beautiful house in Denver. So we got most of that done, and I just kind of scrapped it. After that, we moved to a new city and had a lot of other responsibilities, and I was feeling insecure about the music. And honestly, for me, like, the catharsis of writing the songs, that part was kind of already done, and just didn't feel like putting it out into the world. But then fast forward, you know, a number of years, like 7 years or something, and some friends of ours who were not aware of like my musical past, so some new friends, it somehow came up, and I shared these mostly finished, but not quite finished songs with them. And they loved it, and they thought it was great. And so they just continued to encourage me to pick it back up and finish it and complete this album. You might as well, kind of thing. And so I did. I thought I might as well finish it. I put it out. And then I didn't know if there was going to be more music after that. But I think getting that out into the world kind of opened up a floodgate.
And your friends were right for pushing you into doing it.
Yes, I'm very grateful to them for doing that.
I want to get into one of the songs on All Glory. The song Vessel of Mercy gets into accepting Christ and how it changed a life. Now, you got to tell me, is that your personal story?
All my albums are concept albums. I need to have like some sort of direction that helps me kind of write and think about things in. And it's very helpful having like some constraints or some direction. So with that album, well, Vessel of Mercy particular, yes, it's about me accepting Christ, but it's also really about my inability not to. Once the Holy Spirit, like, you know, regenerated my heart and showed me the beauty of Christ and his gift of salvation, it was something where it was basically impossible not to. And I became this vessel that God poured his mercy onto. So yeah, there's a lot of autobiographical stuff on that album, while also working through, you know, how does the mechanics, let's say, of salvation and creation and sin and the fall and this bigger story that we're all living in, how does all that play into also like my autobiographical life? So yeah, Vessel of Mercy is definitely about my relenting to Christ, giving him my life and letting him be merciful and gracious to me.
Something else we have to talk about is that you're a thief, because you stole your band name from a song done by Watashi Wa.
Yes, I did. Yes. Yeah, Watashi Wa was very meaningful to me in the you know, late 90s, early 2000s. I grew up in California, somewhat near where they were playing shows at, and they were on a little label called Betty Rocket Records. And at that time in my life, kind of around the time when I became a Christian, their music and some other local punk bands became very influential on my life. And a lot of the theology really helped me in a crucial time. That was, you know, around when I moved to Colorado, went through big identity crisis, and went through some struggles in my teenage years, moving away from my friend group. So there's just a lot of comforting lyrics and a lot of songs by Watashi Wa. Fa Peste is one of them. That's the last song on their album. Lost a few battles, won the war. And actually, this was back in 2007. I decided then that if I ever wrote more music, that I wanted to name the project Fa Peste, because even back in 2007, I felt like all the cool band names were already taken. Like there's nothing new under the sun out there that I could come up with that would fit. And I've always been self-conscious about the idea of, you know, just going by my name as an artist. So I wanted something that could be at least seem like a band, and maybe if other musicians wanted to play with me, it could work that way. And so Fa Peste was a name that, because it was a made-up word, I had asked Seth from Watashi Wa about this one time, and apparently it was a made-up word, that because of that, nobody else probably would have taken it. And yeah, I decided in 2007, I was like, that's going to be the project name. And that's what it's been. So I just didn't really release anything for many years later.
That's the question I was going to have for you, because I tried looking up the word, but I couldn't find any idea of what it actually meant.
Yeah.
So you can make it applying to whatever you feel like.
You can. And this also really helps guide the direction of this project. So, you know, music, it's very easy for it to become an idol in my life. But the lyrics of the Watashi Wa song, Fa Peste, were always meaningful to me. And my takeaway from those lyrics is that God is sufficient for me, and I find my greatest satisfaction in him. So that's really kind of what the word means to me. But yeah, it could mean whatever to anybody. But yeah, it was, I think a friend of theirs just came up with the word on the spot when they were trying to name that song.
I went to the trouble of looking up the lyrics of that song. And part of it goes, I give all my days to you with all my dreams and the ones I love. I pray that you'll keep them with me, whatever today brings.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that's actually the heart of what you're doing.
Yeah, that is a constant prayer in my life. Yeah.
Since we touched on Fa Peste's debut, we're going to get into album number two, What You Don't Know. And I don't get that, because you didn't finish the saying. I expected to hear What You Don't Know Won't Hurt You.
That's not the saying that it was based on. So the last song on that album is called Don't Know What You Don't Know. And I didn't want to name the whole album that long of a title, so I just shortened it to What You Don't Know. But it's about our lack of knowledge, specifically of future events. That album, a lot of the theme of that is anxiety and worries as a parent, having to be responsible for these beautiful, wonderful children I have. I'm a very anxious and worrying kind of person. And so a lot of that album deals with trying to overcome those things. But one of the things, you know, in the last song on the album, Don't Know What You Don't Know, is we also don't know what God is doing in our lives, that these trials that may or may not come that we worry so much about are also things that are going to be blessings to us when we look back on it. And interestingly, that last song on the album, I blatantly rip a verse from that Fa Peste song from Watashi Wa. Not the verse you quoted, but one of the earlier verses. I pretty much took almost line for line for a verse in that song, because as a nod, like, you know, people can search the internet. It's not like it's a secret if they search the song Fa Peste, but because it felt like a bridge in my life, the importance of that song in my youth to singing about this album now, being older, and bringing over some lyrics of a very meaningful song into that song felt right to me.
Well, the album even includes the one song that's literally called Cares and Worries.
Yes.
It says, cares and worries erode my mind, fearing trouble all the time. No, I can't see your glory when I fix my eyes on cares and worries all the time. So what it is that I appreciate about that is that you're being so honest. Because, you know, a lot of Christians won't admit that our daily struggles can overshadow our faith.
Yeah, I don't even know if I ever thought many people would really hear my music. I don't write it with the intention for other people. Like, it's not meant to be worship music in the sense that we think of worship music, like corporate worship. It's worship for me. A lot of these lyrics start out as little prayers, thoughts that I have, things that I'm wrestling with. And if they're honest, it's just because I don't know how to not be with this, because it wouldn't feel right if I was trying to obfuscate things, because these songs are more for me, if that makes sense. And so it's silly to put them out there for the world to hear, but first and foremost, like I find joy in writing the songs, and I wouldn't necessarily enjoy them as much if I was trying to obscure their meaning even from myself. So I don't know, they're pretty blatant and honest. And I don't dress up the lyrics too much.
I do find that with a number of artists, that they effectively do make the music for themselves.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of selfish, because there's so much time that I spend away from my family, like in the evenings when my kids are in bed, when I'm writing these songs and recording them and stuff, that I could be spending with my wife or on the weekends. Oh no, I'm using this as a means for me to work out my own salvation and fear and trembling, that like this is a means for me to hopefully to continue to grow in the grace and knowledge of Christ by examining my own heart. And it so happens that I like music that actually, you know, a lot. So putting these words to songs, to music. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's selfish, but I also, I don't know. I don't feel like I could write songs for other people, because not that it would be pretentious for someone else, but for me, that feels like it'd be really pretentious if I was like, oh, I'm going to write this song for people in this place that are going through this thing, as if I'm anybody that could speak to that. Like, I'm just some dude, you know, living in Colorado with kids, and I work a job, and I'm not a professional musician, you know? So who am I to put myself in that position? But if there are people out there that maybe go through similar things and resonate with my lyrics, that's really cool. Like that, somebody just the other day on the internets, actually told me that they found comfort in my latest album, and that meant a lot. That's like an unbelievably cool thing to hear, that somebody else found comfort in something that brought me comfort to make.
That was a great segue, because you do have a new album out. And I got to tell you about when I was listening to This World Ain't Mine to Change, I've been getting the impression that you've also given this release a theme.
Yes. So again, I feel like I need to have some sort of theme to my albums. And that came, it usually comes pretty early as I'm writing. And the song That's Okay was one of the first songs written for the album. I had a couple other songs that were holdovers from previous albums that didn't seem like they fit. But That's Okay was written very, very early on. And the album title comes from that song. There's a line in it that says, this world ain't mine to change, and that's okay. And most of the album really is about letting go of control, about finding contentment in that though there are things about this world on a large scale, on a minutia scale, like, you know, within personal relationships, but even like on a nation level, there are things that I would love to change, but I see it as a good thing that I can't, that I'm not God. It's a good thing that I'm not offered, you know, the one ring from Lord of the Rings, because I probably wouldn't throw it into Mount Doom. I probably would try to wield it, and I would do a horrible job. I've been trying to take great comfort in the fact that God is God over this world. I am just one small, insignificant grain of sand, and that's a good thing. Yeah, the title, This World Ain't Mine to Change, the theme, the general thrust of the album is this, me trying to let go and be happy about it, which is not always easy.
Something else about That's Okay is that you also deal with about a person getting older. Mm-hmm. When the lyrics say, they say it's a young man's game, and well, I'm sitting on this bench feeling my age, and if I've got a part to play, it ain't center stage, and that's okay. But seriously, here's the counterpoint. Don't you think that pretty well every artist wants to be center stage?
Yeah. Yeah. I know I did once upon a time. A long time ago in my youth, yeah, I wanted to be a famous musician. That was my goal. And then I kind of set that aside, and now I write music not with that intention. I don't think that my music has widespread appeal. I don't think that I'll be in the spotlight, so to speak, and that's okay. It doesn't mean my flesh wants that. I desire that, but the better part of me recognizes that I don't need it. And again, who am I? Like, I probably cause more damage being someone that people listen to. So I'm grateful to play whatever part it is God has for me to play, that as long as I'm able to make music and that I continue to have inspiration, I can put songs out there. That's awesome. And wherever they go, however far they reach, that's not ultimately up to me. You know, I'm super grateful that you are talking to me about these songs and that you're putting me out there to your listeners. But I can't control who's going to hear it or like it or anything. And I'm learning to be content with that. I mean, I'm about to turn 40. Like, I'm not starting a career doing this or anything. So,
well, I do understand where you're coming from, because Papastate really doesn't fit any particular niche. And I guess if somebody was going to ask me, say, well, what do they sound like? I'd have to say it's indie rock. But the thing is, you don't hear much of that anymore. It's like you're creating music from a different decade.
Thank you. Many decades ago, I do find a lot of inspiration from a lot of 60s music in particular. Some of my favorite artists.
60s, come on. You weren't even born in the 60s.
I still, some of my favorite artists, man. Brian Wilson, Bob Dylan. Yeah, I love a lot of 60s music, not just them. Those are just two of my favorites that I pull some inspiration from. I don't try to write any one particular genre. Again, when I first started this, I didn't have this grandiose idea or plan. It was just music that I felt like I needed to get out when I was writing All Glory. And then from there, I would maybe intentionally try to take a little thing from here or there as inspiration, but much of it is what comes out is what comes out. I tend to write these songs in fits and starts, you know, in evenings here, evenings there, on the weekend. Rarely do I write a whole song in one go. So it's a lot of whatever comes to me that day. And it tends to be a little bit of a hodgepodge. And maybe that's a hodgepodge that might be pleasing to some people's ears, and other people might be like, I don't know what genre this is and I don't like it. And that's cool too. So I don't know.
Sampling from the buffet.
Yeah.
Here's the one that really took me by surprise. It's the surf rock that's found on Doom Surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have told me that you live in Colorado.
Yeah.
Should I explain that there is no surfing in that state?
There is no surfing, correct. I grew up in California and lived somewhat near the coast and had some family near the coast. I spent a lot of time growing up by the beach. And I love the ocean to this day. I grew up listening to the Beach Boys at home. And so always loved that. Got into instrumental surf rock. Old bands like Dick Dale, The Ventures, The Astronauts. There's some newer bands that are doing it that are really sweet. So I got into that. I've always loved that, the sound of those guitars. And I don't know, I guess it's the California boy in me that loves surf rock. So it is peppered throughout the album here and there for sure.
It's got a fun sound, but the song is serious. It's about losing control by becoming addicted to negative news.
Yes.
But really, isn't that a constant nowadays?
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was just having fun with the juxtaposition of the music and the lyrics. This idea of doom scrolling or doom surfing, that I wanted an excuse to make a little bit more of a blatant surf rock song. And so that was my goal with that. And fun fact, the bridge on that song, it changes keys and it goes into a double harmonic major. I think that's what it is. It's the same type of key that Dick Dale's Miserloo, like just a classic surf song. It's like, mm-hmm. I really wanted to say, no, this is surf music by going to that in the bridge. Anyway, I was just having fun. The music's fun. The lyrics, not so much. I don't know. I like the juxtaposition of it. And yeah, that song is really, it's about me being addicted to just doom scrolling on my phone, to just listening to podcasts. And yeah, whether it's the news of the day or it's me watching the slow motion car wreck that is social media that I'm a part of, by the way. But there's a sense of pride and ego as I see myself better than these other people online, which is just so wrong, because I'm not better. So like, I get this dopamine hit of like, oh, I'm not as dumb as these people, or just this addiction to needing to know what's going on in the world, needing to know all this horrible stuff. And it can be detrimental to my health, my relationships, things like that. And so I wrote the song as kind of a way of hoping to purge that from my life, to get to, you know, get better at my doom scrolling. And I don't know if it's really helped. It's still something I struggle with deeply to this day, of just being, you know, constantly online. And that song, of all of them, definitely does not have, like, lyrically a good resolution to it.
Is that important in a song to have a resolution?
No, not at all. I mean, for me, it's just honesty. And so because that hasn't been resolved yet for me, I guess that's why there is no resolution. But no, I wouldn't put boundaries on songs like that. Songs can be lots of different things.
You talked about the juxtaposition with that song. That also happens again on the song Vengeance. Because that song sounds like it could have been done by Frank Sinatra.
But
lyrically, it goes Old Testament, warning people of God's wrath. Why create that dichotomy between the music and the lyrics?
Well, that was one of the first songs written. It was written a number of years ago. That and the song Things Change were, I think, written before That's Okay. And they were holdovers from previous albums. And I finally felt they found a home on this album. So All that to say, so some of the music, you know, the chords and lyrics and stuff came from prior to this project. But a lot of the instrumentation was really just my love, again, of 60s, late 50s, Frank Sinatra's. I'm very pleased that you would throw that reference out there. I definitely don't deserve it. But my love of, you know, Brian Wilson productions, very full instrumentation, orchestral at times. But the song was originally written as a more of a folk tune, which is where kind of it begins. To me, I actually don't see too much of a juxtaposition lyrically and musically, to nerd out musically for a second. All the chords in that song, if I'm remembering correctly, are major seven chords that don't have a strong resolution. I'm even playing like the one chord of the key. We don't know. It's like, really, you don't know what key the song is in until the last chord. At least that's how I intended to write it. So for me, there is this unsureness in the music. But yeah, lyrically, the song is about justice, our desire as humans for justice. So much of the lyrics are just basically pulled straight from scripture, from a number of psalms and revelations and things like that. And, you know, there are these imprecatory psalms that I resonate with. I have a lot of anger in my heart, and I want to see a lot of wicked people punished. That's where the song begins. Most of the verses are this desire, as well as this comfort that God will bring about his vengeance upon those who deserve it. However, as Christians, we aren't to leave it there. We're told to love our enemies, to pray for our enemies. And so that's really where the choruses of the song come from. I wrote it from a place of just anger. I just wanted to sing an imprecatory psalm. And I really just kind of pulled those lines from them because I didn't know how to say it better. But I didn't feel comfortable leaving it there because of what I saw in my own heart. And so I needed to add that warning in the chorus that, you know, turn to him before Christ returns. Basically, but it's a call to repentance to those very same enemies that I wish would get their justice. What I am told to desire is that those same people would actually repent and turn to Christ and be forgiven and receive the same grace that I've received, and that that justice and vengeance would be poured out on Christ on the cross for them. So it is, there is a struggle and a tension in that song for me within myself.
With all of that, and you never turned it into a metal song.
I can't play metal. I wish I could play metal. It's so fun, but I'm not a good enough guitar player.
Something interesting about This World Ain't Mine to Change is that you went through a major change, because instead of staying independent, you decided to hook up with Velvet Blue Music.
I didn't decide that. That was all Jeff Cloud with Velvet Blue. I reached out to him, but it was not my decision to make.
So it was Jeff's fault.
It's his fault. He is so kind and gracious towards me, and he believed in the album. And he was like, dude, let's do this. Let's release this album on Velvet Blue. But it was his decision to make. We've been in contact for many years. I actually reached out to him before my previous album. but we've been talking, and I was so grateful to do that because I've been a big fan of Velvet Blue for many, many, many years. I don't even know how long.
It's one of the few record labels that actually has artistic artists. That's harsh, but it's true.
Maybe. There's still some good labels out there. I mean, it's not like it once was. There used to be a larger variety of labels that had great artists on them. And there are still other ones, but Jeff has always been so good at, he's got great taste and he finds these great artists. And I've been a fan of what he's done for a long time. And that's why I reached out to him. And it just was amazing how it worked out. And he was totally willing to do it. And this is the first time my music's been on vinyl. You know, I like physical media and I've released it on CDs and stuff before, but we gave it the full treatment and it's a really beautiful vinyl. And so thankful to him.
I'm just trying to give you a hard time tonight because I've got yet another song that I want to pull in.
Okay.
Really, the majority of your songs deal with faith, at least in one aspect or another. Like on Gotta Sing It, you do say something interesting. All these songs I write are looking at a future time when all this dissonance finally finds its rhyme. But for now, we were made for these times. Obviously, there isn't any dissonance in your music. So what were you actually aiming at?
So I think that's in me acknowledging that, yes, my music very much focuses on my own faith and my own journey through life and to submit to and worship God. So I'm acknowledging that all these songs I write are looking to a future time because I don't feel much like I'm at home here in this life. I'm very much looking forward to the culmination of all things when Christ returns and makes a new heaven and earth. And I get a glorified body that doesn't keep growing old and forgetting things and all the other things that I've got going on in life. So I'm very much looking forward to that future time. That's what my faith and my hope rests in Christ and rests in his promises. And the dissonance, I think, really is just referring to not my music, but referring to the world in which we live, where there is still sin is prevalent in the world, where things don't make sense sometimes, where evil seems to triumph at times, where bad men are rewarded and good men are punished, and many things like that that just don't seem to make sense. So much of that chorus, it's acknowledging that my music is very forward looking, but then it's also a bit of a reprimand to myself while at the same time being a nod to the Beach Boys. On the album Pet Sounds, there is a song called I Just Wasn't Made for These Times. Beautiful song. Brian Wilson wrote the music and Tony Asher wrote the lyrics. And the lyrics are very much about feeling as if you're not at home in this world and that you were made for some other time. Maybe things would have been better in the past or whatever. And, you know, we were talking about my love for 60s music. And so I guess I'm a little bit of an old soul and I do wish for simpler times maybe when the internet didn't exist or things like that. Though I'm very grateful it does because we're having this conversation.
Exactly.
And so the chorus of that song is, I just wasn't made for these times. And I'm not trying to contradict Brian there because that's a very emotional feeling. And I very much resonate with it, and I feel that way all the time. But the last line in the chorus of my song, Gotta Sing It, that, but we were made for these times, is me reminding myself that though my emotions tell me I feel like I'm not at home right now or I'm not in the right time and place, I am in the right time and place because this is the time and place that I live in. This is where God has placed me. He created me now, and I have a purpose here, as small as it might be. It is an important purpose. And so though my songs look forward, it's kind of also me telling myself, like, don't get so lost in this, like, oh, I can't wait till the culmination of all things. And when Christ returns, like, no, you need to focus on today as well. Like right now in this time that may not feel comfortable.
Yeah, I get you. So there's something else that's cool about This World Ain't Mine to Change is that you bookended it. You've got two tracks, Be Forgotten begins, and the album closes with Be Remembered. What was the purpose?
Those feed into the larger idea. And the way that they feed into that idea of the album is there's this old Zinzendorf quote where he says, preach the gospel, die, and be forgotten. And I think it's a great quote. I think it's very important. It's meant a lot to me to remind me that I am not as significant as I think I am. It's humbling to me to remember that I will die. I will be forgotten to the sands of time. You know, my great, great, great grandchildren probably won't even really know who I am because, you know, I only know so far back in my ancestry and, you know, I'm going to be forgotten by this world. This world is not my home. It doesn't love me. And I think that's a good thing to be reminded of because the first part of his quote is preach the gospel. Like while you're here, do something that matters and that's meaningful and that will be lasting. So the album opens with the bummer of all bummer lines, die and be forgotten by a world that never loved you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that'd be a fun way to open the album. And then it's bookended with Be Remembered. I mean, this whole bookend idea was inspired by an article I read by Ronnie Martin, actually, who's also on Velvet Blue Music from, you know, Joy Electric fame. Mm-hmm. And he wrote an article titled Preach the Gospel, Die and Be Remembered, where he talks about that Zinzendorf quote, but he also talks about how in scripture we are comforted with this idea that the righteous will be remembered, that God has a purpose for us and that we will be remembered and spend forever in eternity with him. So though we will be forgotten by the world, you know, Zinzendorf had a purpose with his quote to, you know, get rid of our hubris, to humble us and to set us on the path of working with a purpose in the life that we have in this short fleeting time. Ronnie Martin's article was a good reminder that we're not actually insignificant, that we will be remembered by the one who created us, and that we should take comfort in that. So it feeds into the general theme of, again, I'm going to spend a small number of years on this planet compared to all the time that has existed, and I'd be lucky to make a tiny little dent in it. And that's okay. I should be comforted in that because I will be remembered by my creator. And I don't need to have this outsized belief that I'm more important than I am. I'm as important as he has made me to be. And that's actually more important than I can even fathom. And that's really kind of what the last song on the album is kind of about. So that's the idea for the bookend.
This sounds morbid, but I think you just wrote your own obituary.
Good. I have these weirdly superstitious thoughts sometimes. And I even thought, I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to write another album after this because I feel like, you know, God's going to take me at some point. I think when I wrote that, it was like, wow, I don't even know how to write a song. It feels like the kind of the last song that I should write, but I wrote it and I want to put on this album.
Before you go, you got to explain to people how to spell the name Fepeste.
Yeah, Fepeste, it's spelled just like it sounds, Fepeste, right? Well, a fun little anecdote. My friend Taya, she does vocals on a lot of my songs. She is currently a missionary over in Moldova, which is right next to Romania, and she has been learning Romanian. And peste, the P-E-S-T-E part of my name, I guess is fish in Romanian. And Fe is the periodic table element for iron. So she jokingly refers to my project as Iron Fish. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, I really appreciate you coming to the Antidote for this talk and speaking with us about Fepeste.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to spend the time. And you ask a lot of great questions. And thanks.
Thanks to you.